There's not strong evidence that we're having more. There is a prediction on the basis of the models that they may become more intense, more regular, even semi-permanent. But that's one of the weaker lines of evidence that we have right now. Andrew may want to talk more because it's more his area of expertise as to what causes the ENSO fluctuation.
Still no clear evidence of a cyclical period or an increase in frequency of El Niño events.
Yeah, could you just expand on how that bias in water temperature influences the group? I didn't quite get something to do with the distribution of sensors.
Yeah, so the bias in the temperature record was based on measurements of sea surface temperature, so it was only to do with the oceans, and it was around the 1940s, and it was basically a shift in the predominance of records that were collected by British ships to ones that were collected by American ships. Not that one? Ah, yes. So the way the NASA record calculates temperature in the United States is it gets an automated recording from temperature stations and then calculates the temperature anomaly on that basis. There was a shift in the baseline of those periods that wasn't reported to NASA, and so the baseline then got shifted for these temperature stations, and the analysis started to assume that the baseline was lower than it actually was. So that required the correction that was only in the 48 states of the United States.
Certainly more rigorously in the last few years via satellite methods, but we also have ground-based solar radiation recording instrumentation throughout Australia and in the globe as well. So, yeah, we do have a good record in recent years, not so much in early years. Certainly beyond maybe 10, 15, 20 years, the record for that's probably not so good.
And in the next lecture, I'll present the recent record of it based on satellite measurement and the longer-term approximation of the solar record going back through many centuries and talk about whether that's likely to be driving climate change. Yeah, that's going to require quite a bit of detailed information to show whether that's the case, and that will be one of the major focuses for the talk in 2 weeks' time. So I'll reserve questions on that topic until 2 weeks' time. I'm not skipping the question because it's going to be the major part of that talk. Is that at the back? Yeah, the main problem with it is it's one of those pieces of proxy information. So it's not actually a direct measure of temperature. It's a logbook record of weather conditions. So they use that to try and calibrate based on the later period where they have got temperature records from those ships and try and work out what those logbook records were actually referring to in terms of relative temperature. So it's My understanding is they weren't using thermometers through until about the 19th century in those records, so they're using other approximations of temperature. So in other words, it's a reconstruction of temperature on the basis of the log reports rather than actually a direct instrumental measure of temperature. So it's another one of those proxies, just like the tree ring data and the borehole data, where we have to try and estimate what is meant by those proxy information, translated into a temperature rather than being a direct measure of temperature. They didn't log the temperature, they reported the weather conditions, and from that a temperature is inferred.
I'm not sure, but certainly of decades, more than 50 years, and certainly 50 years of very accurate, high-quality record.
50 years of very accurate record?
Yeah. But some of them go, several of them I know go back further than that. I'd have to check how far back. And your second part of the question was how we correct for...
Well, I guess I'm alluding to the fact that the earlier you go back in any measurement, be they proxy or otherwise, the less robust they are. And so a lot of these longer-term projections, which were shown on the slides, were longer-term, which purport to show that long-term there's global warming. I don't doubt that's a fact, but I wonder just how much reliability you can place on those earlier records.
Yeah, I think the key thing to consider is whether there's more variance in the record, because there certainly was back then, but it's whether there was a systematic bias in the records towards measuring temperatures cooler than they actually were back then, because that's what will change the trend line. So if you have greater variability, then it doesn't necessarily matter, so even greater measurement error, it doesn't necessarily matter if you average across enough stations over a long enough period of time. So you're certainly correct that the longer you go back, and the 19th century records are more sparsely distributed across the globe, so we have to extrapolate over larger areas, and the instrumental measurements were cruder than they are now. But there's been no valid theory put forward as to why they should be biased cold, which would be required in order to have that record unrepresentative of the later record. Vineyards are growing in England now, in northern England, so it's at least as warm then as it is now, and that was based on a few records in Monk's writings, but there's no evidence to suggest that there hasn't always been grapes grown in England, in fact. And another related argument is that the North Atlantic seems to have been warmer because the Vikings colonised Greenland, and in fact it was green back then, but that was one of the early great propaganda pieces in history, was that Eric the Red, after leaving Iceland, decided there was no way he was going to get people to move to icier land, so he called it Greenland. But in fact, the longer-term record suggests that it is considerably warmer now in Greenland than it was back then. Yeah, I didn't display many ice core records there at all, only the last graph really, which showed the Vostok ice record. That's on the basis of a chemical analysis of different oxygen isotopes, and that's been well verified as having a strong match to the instrumental record. So certainly when you're averaging it over periods of hundreds of years, which is what that long-term record, which goes back hundreds of thousands of years, represents, it's a fairly secure proxy. But of course, on the short term, when you're talking over just 1 or 2 years, then it's quite variable. But that's not what it's currently used for. Yes, the correlation between CO2 and indeed the other ways in which we attribute greenhouse warming as opposed to other forms of warming and the relative contribution of these will be the primary topic of the lecture in 2 weeks' time, which is why I studiously avoided it today.
Briefly to answer it, there's no evidence observationally to support the argument that the urban heat island effect has direct influence on local rainfall or even rainfall over a larger area. But in essence, the urban area effect is so small in terms of the global scale and even the regional circulations that we don't see that it's significant enough to influence rainfall in regard to temperature. There's certainly some urbanised areas do have an effect on rainfall, although that's pretty tenuous as well in terms of observations.
It's now reached 7 o'clock, so for those who did want to leave at that time, you're welcome to go now. I'll be happy to hang around while the questions keep on flowing, but I do understand that many of you have to get away, so maybe we'll pause with a question for a couple of minutes to allow you to leave the theatre, and then I would hope you can join the further discussion at some point online. And so that will, on this topic, will be going on over the next few weeks. And then, of course, in 2 weeks' time, I hope you can join me for the next lecture, which is looking at what the likely causes of this temperature warming are. So thank you very much for coming.